How are you doing? You well? Hope all is good with you. It's Tuesday morning. It's October 8th, 2019. And I am Richie Allen. Thanks for joining this YouTube live stream. I really appreciate it. This is a newspaper review kind of mess around. I'm channeling Ray Charles there. Do the mess around. Messing around, basically. Looking at the front pages of the papers and one or two stories. Not to be confused with the Richie Allen radio show. I've had to rename the Richie Allen show to the Richie Allen radio show because some of you are thick. Not many of you, mind, but some of you are mixing up this with the radio show and sending me messages asking me, why aren't you doing the radio show anymore? Wise up. So this is 9:30 Monday to Thursday. The radio show is 5 o'clock Monday to Thursday. It's a different thing entirely. All right. Yeah, I've had a bit of a shave. I was looking a bit scruffy, wasn't I? I shaved the old head. What little bit of hair I have. But I'm here anyway. I'm in good form this morning. Looking forward to a bit of a run. I took my first break yesterday from running for ages. I didn't run yesterday. I had a lot to do and I didn't run. And I don't like that. You know, didn't like missing out. So I'm going to run this morning. Anyway, I'm going to forego the saying good morning to you, just good morning on the live chat, because this is downloaded several thousand times later on Podomatic, and people listen to it in a podcast. I will read some of your comments in a few minutes time, but I'm going to just go straight to the newspapers now. What's that? You're lovely. I am. Thank you. I am lovely. Thank you very much. Right. The iPaper. The best laid plans, eh? Drop immunity for wife of US diplomat who fled UK, says PM. Now, we're all following this story, aren't we? This is the story of Anne Sakoulis, who's married to an American diplomat. And it is alleged that Anne drove her car out of an army base and drove on the wrong side of the road and collided with Harry Dunn, a 19-year-old man, on his motorbike. And God love him, he didn't survive and died. And it hasn't yet been determined whether this woman gave assurances to the UK police that she would stick around and then of her own volition got on a plane, or whether her embassy told her to get the hell out of Dodge. But this has been discussed widely on UK media with politicians from every party saying that she should come back here and that immunity isn't given to diplomats and their families for this type of thing. This goes back to the Vienna Convention of 1961, of course. If you're an anorak, as I am, and you know about these things. Immunity was really designed for, or imagined for, some set of circumstances where workers for governments in foreign countries might be targeted by rogue governments of those countries. And immunity was dreamt up to protect them from, you know, to protect them from tit for tat. I don't know, revenge. You know what I'm talking about. To protect them from when a government who is in conflict with their government from punishing them, basically. Yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that, but you get the idea anyway. Yes. And there's no real chance this woman is going to come back to the UK. It's been proposed that Boris Johnson phone Donald Trump, and apparently he's going to. But there's no real hope that this woman will ever return to the United Kingdom. Some of the newspapers this morning are pointing out that the United States are kind of hypocritical on this front, because back in the mid-1990s, a Georgian diplomat killed a US citizen in the States, and he was drink driving when he did it. He went back to Georgia. There was a massive stink over it, And eventually the United States got its way and he returned to the United States where he was imprisoned. So there are those saying this morning, well, you know, what's good for the goose and all of that. Yeah. But as I said, people in the UK are saying, politicians, come on, immunity for diplomats was designed to prevent rogue leaders of countries taking out their grievances with countries by picking on their diplomats, effectively. So she should come back, is what they are saying. What's interesting about that, dear viewer, this morning is the UK Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab had a long phone conversation with the US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And Dominic Raab said that he raised this issue with Pompeo specifically. And there you are. I raised that issue, he said. But what's interesting about that is, not long after meeting with Dominic Raab, Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of State, tweeted this. Great speaking with Raab. We discussed our intentions to negotiate a future free trade agreement, blah, blah, blah. Ways to counter Iran's malign influence in the Middle East, blah, blah, blah. And Turkey's plans to potentially invade Syria, which we're going to talk about on the radio show later on. And this alleged pullout of Syria by Donald Trump. Don't believe it for a minute. Not going to get into it here because there's too much in it and I'd be here all morning. But Donald Trump is lying, right? They're not pulling out of Syria. And I'll tell you why later on with some guests on the show. But anyway, here's Mike Pompeo saying, had a productive meeting, great meeting with Dominic Raab, but there's no mention of the Anne Sakoulis saga and the death of young Harry Dunn, even though Raab said he made it the pressing issue when he spoke with Pompeo. I don't believe she'll be coming home, coming back, I should say, to the UK anytime soon. Don't believe it for a minute. Yeah, that was the Eye paper. So the Daily Mail then, face justice for my son. And again, this is the mother of Harry Dunn pleading with the American government, to the US government, to ask this woman to come back, to send her back so she can answer questions about the crash. It's a terrible thing, really. It's unlikely that the woman was under the influence. It looks like just a case of poor driving. And I will say this, and I'm not saying this for any laughs. When I returned to the UK, having lived in Spain for over 8 years and driving on the right-hand side of the road, I was very wary, you know, back in the UK, of driving on the left-hand side. Very, very wary of it. And extra cautious. And I was worried about it, you know, roundabouts and junctions, because your whole mindset has been geared to driving on the right-hand side. On roundabouts, give way to the left. You're on, all of a sudden, you're driving on the left-hand side. You're giving way to the right. And you've got to be thinking about that. This woman is an American driver. She's made a terrible mistake. She might, I mean, she's a US diplomat's wife. She's not likely to face any jail time. If she wasn't a diplomat's wife and she fessed up and said, I made a dreadful mistake, she'd be done for dangerous driving and she might get a suspended sentence. She might get a long ban. If she's a UK citizen and she flees the scene, well, she's going to jail. Anyway, it's a story. There isn't any more I can add to that. Terrible thing now. I would say, though, that in my opinion, the state of driving, the level of poor driving, the examples of poor driving that I encounter as a driver. Now, I'm a decent driver. I know everybody says that. Everybody says, oh, I'm a good driver. But I'm a stickler for the rules of the road, me. I am. I really am. I drive within the speed limit at all times. I don't hog the centre lane on motorways. I drive in the left-hand lane. I'm careful. I don't get angry. When I come across learner drivers, you know, I exercise a lot of patience with them because I was there myself one time. What is it with human beings, you know? Very short memories about things. Now, look, I'm no saint, as you well know. But when it comes to driving, I take great care not to be an idiot when I'm on the road. But I think the standards of driving are at deplorable levels now. And I used to think it was bad in Spain, and then I came back here and I was like, Jesus. I was almost apologetic then to the Spanish, because I used to be really brutal on the Spanish. You know, when I was in discussions with people in Spain about driving, I would talk about Spain, which was and is a very corrupt country, you know. It's brown envelope, capital of Europe, Spain. People getting driving licenses because they bribed the instructor. You know, I could be here all day. And the standard of driving there is poor, but here it's gone ridiculous here in the UK. It's really bad. Anyway, enough of that about driving. Of course I've made mistakes when driving. Of course, we all make mistakes. But because I don't speed, and because I don't behave like a fucking idiot, my mistakes are very unlikely to result in the death of a pedestrian or in the death of another driver. The Times, US accused of betrayal in diplomat row. So you can see this is everywhere today. Anne Sokoulis, she hasn't returned home, by the way. She's staying with a relative or in a hotel somewhere. Such is the level of media attention in this, even in the United States. The Metro newspaper, pole dancing, the Prime Minister and me. This is Jennifer Arcuri, the businesswoman. Allegations that she had a relationship with Boris Johnson and that her tech company benefited from decisions made by him when he was mayor of London. He denies it categorically. She denies it emphatically. She was on Good Morning Britain yesterday. It was a rather bizarre interview, really. Really bizarre interview. Amusing at times. She's got a pole dancing pole, or she did have, in her apartment, which I think was 1,200 square feet. The apartment doubled up as her office. Bojo visited there several times. It's highly probable that he had some sort of sexual relationship with her, hence the media interest, or the amplification of the media interest, I should say. They would be interested anyway, but it's doubly interesting because his enemies claim that there was some sort of impropriety there and that that needs to be investigated. His supporters say, well, this is Remoners and those who want to thwart the will of the people, etc., etc., etc. Right? Okay. I'll read some comments now in a moment. The Guardian. No deal Brexit would raise public debt to 50-year high, Johnson told. This is the Institute for Fiscal Studies. It's a think tank. And it has published a report this morning alleging that if we leave it no deal, debt or UK debt will spiral, and austerity would be an inevitable consequence of that. And it says in its report that borrowing would increase exponentially. Borrowing, that's government borrowing. I love when the news media, when they collectively start talking about borrowing, because it gives me a slimmer, it gives me a slimmer? It gives me a sliver and a glimmer of hope that people at home might start asking, borrowing from who, right? But anyway, I won't bore you with that. So the Institute for Fiscal Studies is saying we can't leave with no deal because we're all doomed. It's like Ralph. It's like Ralph and Friday the 13th. See, what happens to me is I don't sleep very well. I've got insomnia, as you know. And I don't have the power of speech at 9:30 in the morning. My brain doesn't function till about midday. The run wakes me up. I'm awake now. But here to here, in between, there are problems. Before midday, right? Christ. That's why I struggle to articulate things. And I'm actually not too bad, you know, in terms of the old brightness department. I'm not half bright, you know. I like to think anyway, but sometimes I do myself a grave disservice stumbling over my words. Maybe I need to do this a little bit later in the morning, but that's not going to happen either. Right, so that's The Guardian. Financial Times. Customs paperwork set to cost businesses £15 billion in no deal Brexit. More doom and gloom. Yeah, it's Ralph in Friday the 13th. You're all doomed. That's what it is. Do you remember Ralph? He survived till Friday the 13th too, didn't he? When he was killed from... Jason was hiding in a tree, didn't he, and killed him, yeah. Love those old horror movies. How were we scared shitless by those when we were younger? Boris, it's no deal if you won't talk to us, Daily Express. Jean Amos on to me this morning. Fintan O'Toole, the Irish journalist, is writing in The Guardian, talking about the horrors of no deal as well. So there's a bit of ramping up of the fear porn about no deal. Look, no deal is not going to happen anyway. They know this, so they're over-egging the old pudding, as it were, I would suggest. What about the Telegraph today? It's grim out there this morning, it's grim. Web giants cashing in on misery of children. Big report into children gambling online. And we've talked a lot about this, so I won't get into it. There's an interesting picture. I think I've used that picture, have I? As my holding image this morning, I think I might have, of a protester being removed from central London by the police by 5-0 yesterday. A lot of talk as well this morning about Extinction Rebellion and the protests which began yesterday. They're even happening in Dublin, apparently. 2 weeks of disruption until they get what they want. Daily Telegraph. By the way, Celia Walden, see the top there, online trolls aren't worth police time. This is very good. I will briefly talk about this in a second. I've got the article to hand. Indeed. She's uncovered some fairly amusing, but then also fairly disturbing statistics about police time being wasted on chasing trolls online. Yeah. Yeah. Would you believe they've only prosecuted 6 trolls in the last year and a half? To the cost of about £300,000 per troll to the taxpayer. Yeah. These are just guys saying stupid things online. We've all said stupid things online, haven't we? This is not good, is it? Free speech. ITV knew Kyle Guest wanted to die. This is The Star. The Star has been on this for a long time. This former television programme, The Jeremy Kyle Show. And how the well-being and the psychological well-being of the guests was an afterthought, basically. Let's get unsophisticated, rough and tumble people into a studio to bare their souls and give no thought to how it would affect them afterwards when they've humiliated themselves on national television and you didn't take that into consideration. The implications for them afterwards when they went back to their community and they were laughed at and ridiculed and their clips were put on YouTube. Right? You do have a duty of care when you interview people. You do. I've been very critical of a certain bunch of goons who pretend to be a news organisation on the south coast of England. And they've interviewed people who were abused in care with no thought to whatsoever to the well-being of that person afterwards. Very serious when you interview people. When you interview anybody, got to think about, especially when you're getting them to tell you their life story. You can't be selfish. Yeah, I'll get 5 or 10 minutes of sensational television. Yeah, but what about the guy when he goes back to his house or the woman when she goes back to her family? Got to think about these things. Okay? This is how it used to be back in the day. Not anymore, though. Not anymore. Right, did you see this, did you? Be Jesus, huh? Listen, before I show you that, let me give some of you a mention. Hi to Jesus, hi to Wendy, to Julie, Dick Scratcher. How you doing, Dick? To Mad About the Guy, because I'm mad about the guy. To Bruce, how you doing, Bruce? Bruce had the Office for National Statistics round. One of the questions, on a scale of 0 to 10, how anxious were you last week? Plus other probing questions on mental health. Unbelievable, says Bruce. Bruce says he was visited by the Office for National Statistics and they were interested in his mental well-being. Hi to Paul. Hi to Jim Kingsbury. Hi to Lessons for Life. Thank you for that lovely super chat donation, my friend. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. It is greatly appreciated. Lots of comments. Hi to Alistair Webb, to Charlotte, to Chris Poacher, to John Kerr, to John Rorty, to the Sheriffess. Sheriff S says, I can't believe Trump is apparently advocating for free speech and a crackdown on fake news for mainstream media, whilst we are moving in a totally different direction. Thank you, the Sheriff S. Thank you very much. Hi to Ella Smith. Lovely. Let me scroll back on down there before we move on. Stuart Batty, how you doing, Stuart? Jean Ann Crowley says, Ah, aren't we all sick about some things? Yes. We are. Mea culpa. I'm as guilty as anyone else. Hi to Cocobell. Kinnell, how you doing, Cocobell? To Ethic Boxing, to Sean, to Dillip. Thank you for watching this live stream. Hi to Kath Holdsworth. How you doing, Kath? Kath says none of us would have gotten immunity after killing someone, so why should she? Yes. True, Kath, but she does enjoy the same protection as her husband, as her spouse. This is the problem, you see. So maybe they need to revise the 1961 Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. They need to revise the charter, the agreements. I agree with you. To say, listen, we did design that so that you could go to England and not be picked upon by an English government that was pissed off with your parent country. That's why we invented the whole idea of diplomatic relations, diplomatic immunity. But we didn't devise it so that you could kill a guy due to reckless driving and then get on a plane. I agree, Kath, but I'm not going to hold my breath. I don't think Ms. I can't pronounce her surname now. Sakulis, is it? I don't think she'll be coming back anytime soon. Hi to Barbara McKenzie, who retracted her message. Self-censorship, Barbara. I do it all the time myself, actually. Hi to Richard Murray. How you doing, Richard? To Wide Awake Radio. And to Joe Public. How you doing, Joe? This is a crap. This is a live stream, YouTube, pay-per-view, nonsense. My opinions, which are sometimes interesting, sometimes funny, sometimes not funny, sometimes banal, and sometimes bizarre. I accept it. So you accept it as well, right? Hey, listen, what did you make of this, eh? Extinction Rebellion demonstrator says he's protesting as a father of two young children who is very frightened of their future before he begins crying his eyes out. I've been called very naive this morning by some of my Twitter followers. I don't mind, I might be. I am naive, of course I'm naive. It's a good way to be, isn't it? Innocent and naive sometimes. I've been told that he is an actor. And I have been told that he is from rentacrowd.co.uk by people who offer me no proof. Prove it to me. Anyway, shall we see the video? There he is clutching a picture of his two young babies. And he is doing it for them. And I've robbed this clip from somebody online who robbed it from the Daily Mail. So I make no apology.
An Extinction Rebellion demonstrator breaks down as he says he is frightened for his two children's futures during chaotic protests in London today. The man, whose children are 4 and 10 months old, was laying in the street as part of demonstrations. When asked what his name was, the man responded, "I'm just a father of two children that's very frightened of their future."
What's your name?
I'm just a father of two children that's very frightened of their future.
How old are your children?
They're 10 months and 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't bag off.
There you are.
You see a picture? Those are the picture of your children?
Yeah.
I think we've seen enough of that. Is he an actor? I don't know. Maybe he's genuine. Because there is a real evangelical fervour, isn't there, going on here? This really seems to have gripped some of these people. Like, sincerely gripped them. I don't think... Some of them are there for a bit of a lark, I think. Some of them are... They've been green movement people for a long time. And listen, there's nothing wrong with the green movement. There's nothing wrong with talking about the continental shelf. There's nothing wrong with talking about coral. There's nothing wrong with talking about cutting down the rainforests. There's nothing wrong with talking about plastic in the oceans that is choking to death marine life. Jesus Christ, absolutely right. These are serious issues here. So a lot of these people are people who have campaigned for many years against fracking, which is the right thing to do. We should campaign against fracking. It's deadly dangerous. And... Well, there are many reasons, I think, why fracking is happening, and I won't get into them now. But these are terrible things for the environment. So I think some of these people are fairly sincere, and maybe this guy is sincere. An old friend of mine from Spain, I don't think he'll be watching. Many, many, many years ago, his wife committed suicide, and she suffered from something called religious mania. They thought she had manic depression, or which these days is called bipolar disorder. But in fact, she had religious mania. She was convinced of an apocalypse. And she used to read the book of Revelation quite a lot. And God love her, she really became absolutely overcome by the notion that there was going to be a rapture. And in the end, despite lots of hospitalization and then her coming home and all manner of treatments, she took her own life. And very difficult for my friend. He eventually, years later, he remarried and he rebuilt his life. He's much older than I am, it must be said. And I look at some of this, and some of what he told me kind of resonates with me. This religious mania, there is a bit of that going on. We're not going to expire in 12 years' time if we don't stop producing CO2, or if we don't reduce CO2 to net zero. We're not going to be in a situation where billions of people are going to die. It's just false, it's untrue, and it's beyond hysterical. But it seems that a lot of people really do believe in it. Maybe this guy is genuine, but listen, I might very well be naive, as you have accused me of being, and he might be an actor. He might be Jesus. And if he is, well, he's not a very good one, is he? Looked a bit fake to me there. But anyway, if he's an actor, I mean, you know, if we agree he is an actor, I would say he's not a very good one. But anyway, very difficult job acting. Gene Ann will tell you, gotta have a talent for it, gotta be good. What else have we got for you? What else have we got for you? Academics in British academia are being given panic buttons because they're increasingly worried about attacks from the student body. Now, I thought this was a bit hysterical, but I looked into it, and it's not just the Telegraph. This is Camilla Turner. She's the editor for the Daily Telegraph. And she features here Professor Rosa Friedman. And Rosa went to her pigeonhole last week, get her mail, to find any assignments from her students. And she found a panic button there, a panic alarm that she's got to carry with her. And this is all because of some academics have opinions around areas like gender identity and sexuality and transgender. And those opinions are being deemed as hateful by some students. And some of these academics are the subject then of attacks, which are getting increasingly worrying, apparently. Like urine being poured under your door and bags of excrement being thrown at you and finding death threats on your voicemail and stuff like that. So they're giving them panic buttons. Firmly believe that sex should not be conflated with gender and that women's spaces such as changing rooms, prisons, sports teams and short lists should be protected. Well, first of all, we shouldn't have all women short lists anyway. Now, my female listeners can abuse me for that. I don't mind. Next time you do a phone-in, which is this Thursday, by the way, every 2 weeks, we're due a phone-in on Thursday, let's talk about feminism and all women short lists. I don't believe in discrimination, full stop. And if you have an all-female shortlist, you are discriminating against other people who might be as qualified or more qualified to do the job. Positive discrimination is not the way to go about redressing issues of balance. You know, it's not. I'll never believe it is. It's just my thing, you know. And you know, the more I see of people in the public eye, women in the public eye, the more I see them, the more women I see in the public eye, Jess Phillips, Stella Creasy, Luciana Berger, the more I think they're just as psychotic as the men they share space with in the House of Commons. Not more psychotic, but as psychotic, as corrupt, as bent, as filthy, as hysterical around these issues. You know, so what sort of women are you going to get if you put all women shortlists together? Anyway, that's my concern about it, right? Hillary Clinton, psychopath, right? I'm not saying they're not great women who wouldn't be like Hillary Clinton or who wouldn't be as crazy as some of the women we see in the UK Parliament now. But all women short. Anyway, look, forget about that, right? So these academics then, they're very worried about their own personal safety. This is a bit mad, really. They disagree with the Gender Recognition Act and the proposed reforms to make it easier for people to self-identify, whereas previously they had to go to a doctor, there had to be some sort of investigation. So they don't like this, certain feminists in academia, and they're being threatened. This is the new thing. I had a chat with my pal Jean Anne the other day about this, about debate, what's happened to debate. There has been a deliberate agenda to end debate, both locally, nationally, and in the media. This has been going on for years. What we have now is we have social media, and we have we have Twitter, and we have Facebook, and we have podcasting, and we have millions of people now making videos on YouTube, all screaming at the top of their voices what they think. That's no bad thing, by the way. The bad thing is that it has led to people who have no comprehension or understanding whatsoever of the need to engage with those who see the world differently to you. And I've been banging on about this for years. And some of you are finally beginning to understand what I was banging on about for years. We get people now like, you know, you have The Spectator on the right-hand side, and you have Brendan O'Neill of Spiked on the right-hand side, and you have other magazines on the left, all loudly signalling how they see things from the right and from the left. And you have people then, the consumers, identifying with one brand or another and exclusively getting their information from that brand because that brand tells them what they want to hear. And this has been going on for several years, and the result of it is now a population globally that doesn't understand debate and doesn't want debate. Like, you've Brendan O'Neill from Spiked screaming on Spiked some very good points about the silliness of Extinction Rebellion, but he's not sitting around a table debating them, is he? Right? And that's how we have been engineered now. Not to debate. Not to say, right, listen, why do you believe that we're all going to die in 12 years? Come in, let's have a chat about it, tell me. And I'll tell you why I don't think we will. And I won't try to make you look like a fool. I won't try to embarrass you. Let's just have a conversation. It's the way it used to be, let's have a conversation. No, and this is the way we've gone, and this is the way we are. It's all... It's been amplified by the social media companies. If you have a very definitive, extreme, but if you've got a very, very one-sided opinion on anything, doesn't matter what it is, and you're very loud in expressing that, the social media companies will amplify you. They don't care whether your opinion suits the far right or the far left or the moderate right or the moderate left. So long as you are espousing a point of view without any tolerance for those who believe something else, they will amplify you on social media. When you are pointing out the dangers of this and how it suits the agenda that we often talk about, well, you're not amplified, you're marginalised. And there's a million ways they can do this. And this is anathema to me. It's a terrible thing for me to witness. Having grown up in commercial radio and grown up in a world where everybody wanted to be in on the debate. Everybody wanted to have their say. You know, the Socialist Workers' Party, Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and not just their members and politicians, but their supporters. LGBT people, trans folks, the travelling community in Ireland. Everybody would say yes to an invitation. Yes. Well, thanks for asking me, Richie. I know you've got that guy on. That guy who thinks that, you know, we shouldn't allow gay people to adopt. I want in on that. I'm a gay man. This is the way it used to be. You would have these long debates. They were intellectual. Why? Well, because the person at home got to hear lots of views. And the production team and the presenter would keep their own opinions out of it. And the person at home would go, it's interesting that, yeah. Well, Jesus, yeah, I see that now, yeah. And then you make your own mind up. That is informing people. Now what we've got is just a lot of opinions. Hyperbole. Commentary. We have commentary exclusively. We have no debate. Ah, you're lying, Richie. I saw two guys on Sky News the other day. You did. But they had 5 minutes. 5 minutes. And they were from the left and from the right. There's no room for anybody now who is saying, well, what if both of them are wrong? What if there's something even more sinister going on here? And I've been trying to explain this for years. You know, a lot of people refuse to come on my program because I've interviewed people who are anti-Israel, or I've interviewed people who are deemed to be racist or whatever. These are very dangerous times. And when I've been talking to you about maybe slinging my hook in 2020, that's genuinely the reason, because I'm becoming very bored with my job, as it's becoming increasingly difficult to get debates going around these big issues because of what I've just described to you. It's boring the piss out of me now, to be honest. And I think by this time next year, I'd be surprised if the radio show was still on the air, because I don't see the point in it. But that's for another day, that discussion. We'll talk about that another day. Before we rush through the rest of the newspapers, let's have a look. Hi to Yup Keck. Hi to Galaxy, and hi to Jennifer Garcia, who says, Richie, debate is no longer about facts and evidence, but rather based on feelings and fear. Yes, no doubt, Jennifer. And those behind this agenda have exploited that brilliantly. People are willingly jumping into pigeonholes, identity groups, finding that which makes sense to them and which affirms their worldview, and then clinging onto it for dear life and jettisoning everything else from their field of vision. That's how I describe it. That guy over there tells me what I need to hear or what I believe. Brilliant. Stick with him. And I will obliterate, jettison, as I said, from my field of vision, anything which opposes how I see things. That was never the way. I've always loved meeting people who see the world differently than me. Not because I'm some sort of nice guy or saintly type figure or martyr, but I've always loved it. I've always loved a good debate with people. I've enjoyed listening to people. Debating is a good thing. You explain how and why it is you see a certain issue in a certain way, and then you listen intently to your, not your opponent, but the person who is debating you, who's got a different point of view. And you listen very hard. And as you're listening, you begin to perspire, because it takes energy to listen. And you don't sit there with your mind closed, thinking of what you're going to say next. You actually listen, because there might be something in there that you hadn't considered. Then you come back and you say, oh, right, okay. Yeah, we might get somewhere in the end. Or we might not. Hi to Bachor, who wonders if all this drama is a desperate attempt to prevent humanity from evolving. Of course it is. The agenda's number one priority is to prevent us ever understanding who we are and what we're really capable of, I would argue. Okay, thanks for all the messages, by the way. I'm going to just quickly run through some of the other stories. A number of you believe that the guy holding the picture of his children was acting. I think Jean Anne might think, and Jean Anne is a very accomplished actress, of course. Done it all, stage, screen, a whole lot. Jean Anne says, that's the trouble with ill-informed amateur actors. They can't act. Maybe he is an actor. I don't know. Funny though. Risible, said Jean Anne. Risible, I love that word. Yeah, who knows? Who knows, eh? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows, big nose? Here's an interesting piece in the Times today, written by a Jewish journalist called Adam Labor. And Adam says, it's not anti-Semitic to ask questions about George Soros and George's, and the part George plays and his Open Democracy Foundation in interfering in the policies of national governments. It's not anti-Semitic, he says, to talk about him. We shouldn't go down that road. I find this very interesting. I don't know if you can read it. You probably can't because the Times is a subscription. But it's a refreshing piece even. He talks there about the migrant crisis and the million migrants in Germany and the problems caused by that. And that's an ongoing problem, of course. The millions of dollars spent by Soros on the Democrats and all the rest of it. So he says, look, you know, let's not portray Soros as an evil Jewish puppet master. But let's look at the influence demands on immeasurable wealth and how that is used, how he uses that to influence and influence the decision making of governments and how that doesn't benefit the people of countries. So let's have that measured discussion. He says, let's not call people anti-Semitic. I think fair enough, by Adam Labor. Those of us who, you know, are serious journalists in the independent media, there are not very many of us, I would say. Virtue signalling again, are you, Alan? No, but there are very few journalists in the independent media. We don't describe Soros and his nefarious activities. We don't describe him as some evil Jew, part of a Jewish little clique. We don't do that. The far right does that. I believe that guys like Soros and others like him are protected by the mainstream media because of their Jewishness. Which interests me because the purpose of protecting him is, oh, Soros is getting it in the neck again. The lunatic conspiracy theorists that hate Israel blaming Soros. Well, that's not true. I don't see Soros as having anything to do with Israel or Jewishness or the global Jewish population. But I believe that people like Soros traditionally have managed to go about doing what they do. He's a foot soldier for the hidden hand, for the agenda, and a very useful one. But his conduct, what he does, it's got nothing to do with Jews or Jewish people. That's a nonsense. But the media would like you to think that. They would like you to think that those of us who watch people like George Soros closely are blaming him for certain geopolitical things, and we're doing so because we've got some ugly hatred for Jews, or that we blame Jews. That's just bullshit. There's no truth in that whatsoever. But it's a good article. Adam Labor in the Times today. You can see it there on screen, some of it. What else have we got there? What else have we got there? Very briefly, vaping. Now, vaping is in the news today. E-cigarettes. It's everywhere today, and I'm hoping to talk about it on the programme later on with Hayden Hewitt. And I've just had confirmation that Hayden, the co-founder of LiveLeak.com and the journalist and broadcaster with a Trigger Warning, youtube.com/triggerwarning, Hayden Hewitt, also Graham Booth. But Hayden, who is a vapor, wants to talk about this because this is a big issue. Before we have a look at the story in the UK, let's have a brief look at a news report out of Michigan. Not Michigan. It's Michigan, you thick fecker. It's Michigan. And in Michigan, they've given shops, retailers, 2 weeks to get rid of the flavoured vaping products because it is believed that they are causing harm, that they are causing adverse health effects in people. Vaping enthusiasts and many academics, they are saying that this is very sinister. And, you know, some see the tentacles of tobacco lobbyists and tobacco corporations here that are worried about how vaping and e-cigarettes are hitting their bottom line pretty hard. Because e-cigarettes and vaping, the whole thing was they'll get you off cigarettes. And of course cigarettes have thousands of chemicals and carcinogenic chemicals and stuff in them, which are bad, of course. And vaping came in and people went, well, vaping is good, it's safe. You get a nicotine hit and you don't get all of those carcinogens. Now, I've never smoked in my life, ever. Never even tried it. And I've never vaped, obviously. So I have no dog in this fight. But I'm very interested in it. Let's have a look at this little news report from, I think it's ABC in Michigan.
Governor Whitmer's emergency rules banning flavored nicotine vaping products were released today. The flavored nicotine vaping ban was developed in response to the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services finding of a public health emergency created by skyrocketing levels of youth vaping. Michigan was the first state in the nation to announce a ban on the sale of flavored nicotine vaping products such as e-cigarettes. Whitmer announced her intention to issue these emergency rules September 4th, and they are effective immediately, although retailers and resellers, including online sellers, have 14 days to comply. Governor Whitmer stated in a press release today, quote, "I'm proud that Michigan has been a national leader in protecting our kids from the harmful effects of vaping. For too long, companies have gotten our kids hooked on nicotine by marketing candy-flavored vaping products as safe. That ends today. This bold action will protect our kids and our overall public health," end quote. Following Whitmer's announcement of the flavored vaping product ban, the White House followed Michigan's lead with a call for similar actions by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The MDHHS Bureau of Health and Wellness filed the Protection of Youth and Nicotine Product Addiction Emergency Rules with the Secretary of State. The rules are effective for 180 days and can be extended for 6 months. MDHHS has also filed a request for rulemaking, which will allow the department to promulgate permanent rules to keep Michiganders safe from the harmful effects of addiction to nicotine. For more information, you can go to our website at abc10up.com for the full press release and links to MDHHS.
Yeah, there you are, right? So that's, and you're seeing similar reports in the UK this morning. Vaping is harmful. And I want to get into this with Hayden Hewitt, and Hayden is brilliant on this subject. Hayden won't mind me describing him as somebody who has smoked in the past, and he has used the vapes. I know he won't mind me even, because I know he's used the vaping device on the Trigger Warning show in the past. So we'll get into that in the second hour. Just a quick one there, Charlie Girl. Thanks for your nice comment, Charlie Girl, who says that she'll be crying if I give up. Look, it's not about me giving up. The reason I said that about 2020, I'm not looking for it. This is not me virtue signaling here. This is not sad fishing. Look, I love what I do. I've loved broadcasting and radio for years, both sides of it. I often miss the production side of it. I used to love producing a presenter, not being on air. Although I was often on air because I would do the Vox Pops and I would sometimes do reports. But I love it. I love the medium. But in the very early days of the Richie Allen radio show, this particular one, back in 2014, if you look back at the programmes, I often had two people on programmes with opposing points of view, opposing views on different subjects. But it has become impossible to do that anymore for the reasons I gave earlier on. I've become, look, I'm not important. Like I said, I could go down Langworthy Road now every day of the week, and it's very unlikely that anybody will recognise me. I sometimes get recognised when I'm in a supermarket or a shop and I'm speaking to the cashier. Somebody will say, oh, you're that guy. But I wouldn't be very well known, even though the program's got a lot of listeners, right? It's not about me, this. But I love debate. And I love challenging my audience or listeners to my programs with presenting them with people with whom they don't want to hear. You know, I'd love to be bringing people on from Israel to talk about Israel. Not so that I could score points and big myself up as some champion of Palestine. No, not at all. But to hear them out and to say, right, hang on a second. Let me put this point of view to you, the Zionist in Israel. And I used to do that all the time. And that's become impossible because the national media and various groups in this country have identified this program as a program that promotes hate and hostility and anti-Semitism and all the rest of it. Now, of course, that's fucking bullshit. We know that. But it means that increasingly people won't come on. And I said this yesterday. You get emails from people that can't come on. Even though I disagree with your points on certain things, Richie, and I would like to debate you, I can't come on because it's not going to reflect too well on me. And it's not just me. This is happening right across the media. And I get bored of it, to be honest. I get bored of it. And I have to be challenged. I'm somebody with a very active mind. It's a very organic mind. It grows and grows and grows and changes. Like your mind, like everybody else's minds, like everybody else's brains. But I'm getting fed up with it. I'm not there yet, but I am getting tired of it. So I can see myself in a year or so doing something in the private sector and just packing it all up. I'll give plenty of notice so that those of you who have supported the programme over the years, I'll give you plenty of notice so that you don't support the programme anymore and you can shut down your contributions and all of that. But yeah, it's not exciting. It's not sexy anymore. It isn't. It's not sexy for me. I had a wonderful conversation last night with Dr. Robin Kelly. What a wonderful man. Now, I would love to have had a doctor on there who disagrees with Robin about the holographic body and about Robin's approach to holistic healing. But they won't come on. And while I loved listening to Robin, I'm thinking my audience also liked listening to him. But there are millions of people that I'm targeting that I want to listen to programs like mine so that they can hear Robin. But they won't come on because they don't want to hear Robin. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because they don't want to just hear Robin. Because they are skeptical about the medical practices of Robin Kelly. Now, the way to get them listening is to have those debates. But you can't have those debates. See what I mean? I'd like people to listen to Alana Freeland. Talks about the space fence, the Internet of Things, and the implications of 5G. Love people to hear Alana Freeland. They won't listen because their minds are made up. Traditionally, the way to get them to hear other points of view was to present their side of the argument alongside the side of the argument that they don't wish to hear. Do you get what I'm saying now? And I can't do that anymore. So I'm bored to death with it, really. At the moment, maybe I need to phone Harry Hewitt or Prince William and do their online questionnaire. Maybe I'm just depressed, maybe. That could be it. But it isn't that. I'm not depressed. And here's the end, finally, for I've gone on too long again today. That's your fault. You keep me talking. Here we go. Earwig-o. This is sad, this. I don't want to laugh at this. It made me laugh, but it's also quite sad. It did make me laugh when I read it. And then when I was kind of getting to the end of it, I got a kind of a profound sense of sadness. I think you'll laugh. And I think you'll be sad as well. This is about a bank robbery in Texas. God love this guy. God love this guy. Texas man robbed a bank to pay for rings a day before his wedding. And there he is there, Heath Bumpus of Crockett in Texas. He robbed the Citizens State Bank wearing his own face. God love him. If you're going to rob a bank, dear viewer, my advice to you is, first of all, don't rob the bank. People don't try to rob banks anymore because you just don't get away. There are easier ways to steal if you want. I'm not recommending you steal, but don't rob banks. Heath walked in, God love him, wearing his own face. Desperate. Because he needed money to pay for his wedding rings. The day before he got married. In he walked. And he threatened the cashier. And he says, I have a gun. And I want money. And the cashier engaged him in a conversation. And he said, I'm getting married and I need the money for the wedding the following day. I'm not sure this guy is fully compos mentis, right? But there he is. God love him. He managed to get home, and the fiance gave him a, she gave him a call on the old dog and bone. She saw him on the telly. You sure that wasn't you? And he said, no, it wasn't me, but it was him. So she said, turn yourself in. He turned himself in. And I think he's currently in custody there. Sheriff Woody Wallace has been talking to the media as well. I just felt a bit sorry for the guy. Don't think he's a career criminal. I know he had a gun, but I don't think he's a threat to society. And I hope he doesn't get a long sentence, the lad. He's obviously broke. And he was getting married. Lost his mind. There you are. A lot of people are broke. A lot of people don't have any money. A lot of people are desperate. And they might be thinking about doing stupid things. That was on Sky this morning. I thought I'd share that with you. Heath Bumpus. Let's hope they show him a bit of leniency, eh? Let's hope they show him a bit of leniency. Right, that's about it for this nonsense. At 5 o'clock today, Hayden's going to come on and talk about vaping, but we'll also talk about other things. Censorship and hateful extremism. We'll get into that with Hayden. But before that, in the first hour, after a news roundup, we're going to analyse Donald Trump's claimed withdrawal from Syria. Because it's a big story. And it's monumental bollocks. They're not pulling out of Syria. Don't believe it for a minute. Although I believe Donald's supporters are crowing triumphantly on social media everywhere saying, you see, this is Donald taking on the deep state. No, it isn't, Alex. Get into it in detail later on. That's about it then for me. Have a good rest of your Tuesday. The sun is shining in Salt Ford. So that gives me great hope that we can get a run in. I'm going for a run. Not going to have a run in with anyone, but I'm going to have a run is what I'm going to do. Okay, 5 o'clock then, usual channels, the radio show. Until then, it is bye from me. Bye now.